And welcome to the MDS podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I am your host, Professor Sara Camargos from the Federal University of Minas Gerais, Brazil. Today, I have the pleasure to welcome Professor Giovanna Zorzi, the Director of Pediatric Neurosciences from the Instituto Neurológico Carlo Besta. She is the senior author of the recent paper on the Movement Disorder Journal, Long-Term Globus Pallidus Internus, Deep Brain Stimulation in Pediatric Non-Degenerative Dystonia, a cohort study and a meta-analysis. Welcome, Dr. Zorzi, and many thanks for your time.
Hello, and thank you very much for this invitation. It's really a pleasure.
Thank you. Could you please tell us the objectives of your study and the gaps it intends to cover?
So the aim of this study was to evaluate the efficacy of Pallidus and DBS in a cohort of pediatric patients affected by idiopathic genetic non-degenerative dystonia. We know that this disease unusually severe in this disabling condition, and DBS has been used to treat these patients since late 90s. But analyzing the literature, in my opinion, there are this critical issue. First, we know that primary genetic dystonia responds better than acquired dystonia, but in this group of patients with genetic dystonia, the degree of the response is highly variable. Attempts have been made to correlate certain factors such as age of onset, disease duration, type of dystonia, but without definitive conclusion. And more recently, some authors suggested that maybe the specific genetic causes may be important factor for the prognosis. The second important consideration is that from the analysis of the literature, the results of the efficacy of DBS are mainly reported in very short and medium term, but what happens in long term? So with this study, we intend to answer this main question. So evaluate the outcome in specific type of dystonia and report the long-term results.
Yes, it is really important. And tell us, how did you select your patients? And how was the study design?
So we include, this is a retrospective study, so we include all the consecutive patients affected by genetic, idiopathic, so we exclude degenerative and acquired dystonia. The second criteria was they underwent bilateral deep brain stimulation at our institute, so we exclude those cases with unilateral or that underwent DBS for status dystonicus. But to increase the numerosity of the population, we also applied the same criteria with all reported patients. So we were able to select from the literature with individual patient data a cohort of 224 patients. So our study is made by our cohort that includes 25 cases, and a group of patients from the literature of, as I said, 224. And we reported the outcome as the primary outcome, the change from baseline using the Burger, Fun, and Master dystonia scale.
And how long was the follow-up from your patients?
So from our patients, the mean post-surgery follow-up was 11.4 years. And this was a big difference compared to the meta-analysis cohort in that the mean follow-up was only 3 years.
Yes. So I think you covered a very interesting gap on the field. And what were the outcomes of your study?
So overall, we can say that we showed that both in our cohort at 1 year, we had a mean improvement of around 40% of the scale. And the last follow-up, the mean improvement was 33%. We observed improvement at each time point of the follow-up, but there was a tendency to decrease over time. But also we show a great variability among patients with different phenotypes. patients with EYT1 dystonia showed the best and most stable improvement, both at short and long-term follow-up. Also, patients with EYT6 dystonia in our cohort show a very nice improvement at 1 year, but there was a tendency to decrease over time. Let's say that at last follow-up, the improvement was around 30%. KMT2B dystonia show a less spectacular improvement at 1 year, but a little more improvement at the last follow-up. If we consider the patient with idiopathic dystonia, so the improvement was at 1 year about 33%, with a little decrease at last follow-up. There was a proportion of side effect that was comparable in the literature compared the rate of infection. It was around 80%. But we had unexpectedly two patients with the serious side effect of lesion during surgery. But we have to consider that those two patients had a lesion because they had to be reoperated for the rupture of one electrode in a situation of emergency. So we consider that this relatively high rate of intrasurgical effect was due to this particular situation. So overall, in our cohort, we demonstrated that EMS was effectiveness at short and long-term follow-up with relatively safe procedures.
Yes. And when you compared the second part of your study, you performed a very interesting meta-analysis. So when you compare your cohort with your literature meta-analysis, what were the main differences or similarities?
So the two cohorts were comparable in terms of age of onset, age of surgery, and baseline dystonia severity. But the two main differences was, first, the relative frequency of the single genetic phenotype. That means that in the cohort, there was the major of patients had DYT1 dystonia, followed by BYT11 dystonia, while KMT2B and DYT6, they were relative frequency in our cohort were very low in the meta-analysis cohort. And I think this was due because the genetic screening protocol in our study compared to the literature was very different. Many patients in the literature were only screening for BYT1. And that means also that the idiopathic group of dystonia are not really comparable, because while we know that in our study, our idiopathic are really true idiopathic, we cannot say the same for the literature, because the genetic screening was not complete. The second difference was that the outcome in the meta-analysis and short follow-up was better than ours, but this again is probably due to the fact that it's a higher proportion of the YT1 that we all have a very spectacular response to DBS. And also the outcome at the last follow-up was, of course, better in the meta-analysis, but as we said before, the length of the follow-up is completely different, so they are not comparable. But if you consider the single response in the genetic group, I think the results are comparable. Overall, the rate of improvement is comparable in our cohort and in the meta-analysis.
I understand it is comparable in 1 year follow-up because yours is longer than the literature, right?
Exactly, yes.
So if I understood correctly, your follow-up is one of the most larger follow-ups that we have regarding non-degenerative genetic dystonias, actually.
Yes. Say that in the meta-analysis, there are only 20 patients reported with a follow-up longer than 5 years. We have a mean follow-up of 11.4.
It's really different, of course.
Yeah.
And is the long-term outcome in your cohort associated with phenotype or genotype?
I think this is a very crucial question, and I think the answer is not really clarified. So I believe that our results demonstrate that etiology is probably one of the most important factors for predicting Alzheimer's disease. not only a long term, but also a short and medium follow-up. But also we see that there was a tendency in all categories of decrease of the beneficial effect of EBS. And the reason of this is not really known. One reason could be that there is a progression of dystonia in all cases with the appearance of the worsening of cranial dystonia that we know is less responsive to DBS, and one could be the reason. But the second reason could be also due to local effect where the electrodes of gliosis or due to the long electric stimulation of the globus pallidus. And it can be that there is a loss of efficacy due to the surgical aspect. So I think that we need to have more long-term study to assess the efficacy in a larger group of patients to address this question.
Yes, thank you. I was especially interested in the idiopathic dystonia cases. How these cases, your cases, differ in the phenotypes from DYT1 or actually DYT-TOR1A or DYT-TEP, previously DYT6 patient?
So I can say that overall the phenotype was not different. So according to the inclusion criteria, all these cases have dystonia as the only features. There are no myotonia, but there is no other neurological symptoms. We had some patients who had a phenotype similar to the DYT1, the other similar to the DYT6, which means with a more cranial and axial involvement. We've also tried to identify in the idiopathic dystonia population some clinical factors predicting of the response to DBS, but we were unable to. So unless we don't know the genetic status, I think that the idiopathic cases remains a population where the response to DBS is really unpredictable.
And what about the non-motor symptoms, such as pain or quality of life? Did you notice some changes those patients? I understood also that some of them had less need for anticholinergic or other drugs? Do they have less need for Botox?
So I have to say that our study, since it was a retrospective study, was focused on the motor outcome aspect. So we did not specifically address quality of life or pain. But I can say that normally pain is not a big issue in non-degenerative dystonias. So I would say that there was not such a big change because pain is usually much more important in other types of dystonia. Quality of life, I would say that overall, clinically, there was a great improvement in quality of life that reflects the motor improvement, that children, they were able to gain some function that was not there before surgery, like walking, feeding, writing. So there was a really strong improvement. But I had to admit it's a great limitation of our paper. I think that assess quality of life are the important aspects in considering the effectiveness of DBS in children and also in parents. So I think for the future, and I see that recent work are always addressing the aspect that I think is very important.
And let's talk a little bit about the future you have mentioned. And please tell us, what are your next steps in this field?
I think that pediatric DBS is really evolving and fascinating field. First, there are new technology on the field. So we know that there are new technologies that allow us to be much more precise in targeting the brain. There are new devices that we allow us to record only also from the brain for the Parkinson. So we were able to record some electrical activity that hopefully will correlate with some symptoms with the aim to have an adaptive stimulation. I think the other step is to not only continue to follow patients, but also to search for new targets, because it's my opinion that we see that some genetic dystonias have not really responded to pyramidal DBS. And in my opinion, this means that pyramidal may not be the right target for every type of dystonia. Both probably the neuronal circuitry underlying the dystonia are different among different. So the future is, how can I target better the specific brain area to have the optimal response? So I think the field is to look for new target in genetic dystonias that are not responding to pyramidal DBS.
So you think maybe you think of cerebellar target too.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes.
Neuromodulation unit, like you do in epileptic surgery, when you look for the focus with the painful audio recording from the brain, I think the future can be that.
And we're going to see you again in these next steps, for sure.
I hope.
Professor, thank you so much. We appreciate all your collaboration in the field and with this podcast. Many thanks for your time. And please stay with us and tell us a little bit more in the future about your next studies. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders, and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.